Yvonne, you will never have horticulture introduced in a better way than I just did.
It's just amazing what you come up with.
You will never have horticulture introduced in that way in your life.
Well, if anyone was asleep, they're awake now.
They're awake. Well, gosh, I hope they're 10 after 10. I hope they're not sleeping. Anyway, you brought us a guest. It's my pleasure to meet for the first time. Lindsay McCormick, is there a relationship here?
There is. She'll claim me today. She is my daughter.
Okay. Yes, good morning.
And yes. Lindsay lives in Webster City as well as I do. And do you want to tell them a little bit about what you do over there, Lindsay?
I am my day job when I'm not talking on the radio with my mom. I am a nurse. And I have a 7-year-old son, and I spend my time chasing him around. And between the two things, that keeps me pretty busy.
Where did you go to nursing school?
Iowa Central, Webster City campus.
Webster City, Kansas. Nursing is a tough thing to get through, I'll tell you. A lot of people don't appreciate that. But
well, if it was easy, I don't think the patients would like it.
Well, that's true. But the patients do appreciate the fact that you have to jump through some hoops to get to that pay grade. But man, I've known nursing students in the past, and I've looked at their texts. I'll just be a radio announcer. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I graduated from Iowa Central myself. It's a good, and I
good
now,
school.
Now I teach. Now I teach a couple classes at Iowa Central.
And you teach there as well.
How did life get by so fast? I'll
exactly.
Tell you.
Well, the reason I did ask Lindsay to appear with us today is that she is a beginning gardener, which is a surprise to most of you. You might think she grew up with it. Well, just in a nutshell, when you have a child, you do not force things upon them. They need to come across it on their own idea. I can remember planting those miniature roses at one time, and I say, no, no, not like this. And I grabbed the trowel out of her hand, and I showed her how to do it. And I remember she turned around, walked back in the house, and watched TV. And that was the end of her gardening.
That was the end of your gardening.
That was the end of gardening for about 20 years.
Well, wait, backing up, I think maybe when you wanted some money when you were, I asked her to weed the garden.
Weed the strawberries.
Yeah, and then I noticed she left a note. She didn't know what the... Oh, and remember you were weeding carrots or something, and you didn't know which was a carrot and which was a weed. So, yeah, there's several interesting stories growing up with children. And now we have our own little grandson, Lindsay's son, William, and he's going to be learning to garden with her and already taking an active interest. So now as a grandma, I can see my past mistakes and learn from what I did wrong with my own daughter. And I'm sure other people out there might have that same experience that you can do with your grandchildren what you didn't accomplish with your own kids.
I think so.
And Lindsay just recently moved into a new home with a bare landscape. And so she's been asking me several questions about what to do, the different plants, how they grow. So I realized she'd be a good person to have on the air to answer questions or ask questions back. And so what I have done is I prepared some of the questions that we've recently received at the extension offices in our local area. That's Hamilton, Wright, Webster, and Humboldt counties. And I put together a little list, and I asked Lindsay if she might read these questions, and I'll answer them for us. And then if she doesn't understand what I answered, then we'll get a little bit more in depth with her beginner gardening experience to teach our listeners out there. And please feel free to call anytime during our question period with questions of your own. I'll be glad to answer them. I'll give you that number now. It's 515-955-1400. So just jot it down. You can call anytime. Again, 955-1400. Don't be afraid to interrupt. We love questions. I always get excited when that little light buzzes that we have a phone call on the line. So
she does, Lindsay. She gets pretty jazzed. We have a little light over here, and if somebody calls, that light flashes, and Yvonne, she gets turned on immediately.
And I guess, before we begin, let's announce one of the upcoming things that just recently was found in Boone County is the emerald ash borer. So, folks, this puts it almost in our backyard to think the emerald ash borer was found. So, most likely, it is here. We will be having a program, again, in our local extension area on tree pests, and that's coming up on Thursday, August 14th at 6:30 in the evening. So put that date on your calendar. We've yet to determine the site where we'll be holding that, but it's a good way to get some questions answered. It will be with Dr. Donald Lewis from the university. He's our entomologist for extension down there, and also Dr. Mark Shore will answer some questions. So put that on your calendar, and we'll announce the location next week on this show. So anyway, Lindsay, what do you say we want to begin with some of the questions? And again, listeners, feel free to interrupt us at any time.
Okay, yeah, sure. First question here is, it almost looks like a rodent of some sort took a bite out of a tomato and the area turned black. My neighbor has had the same problem. He stated that this tomato was more than 12 inches off the ground and with a bunch of other tomatoes.
Okay, so when you get a question like that or an email, it leaves one to wonder, okay, it looks like a bite out of their tomato. Well, when it's 12 inches up off the ground, that kind of leaves away a rodent because that would be kind of hard. So what I'm guessing probably it would be was what we call blossom end rot. We're seeing a lot of that this time of year.
What is it?
It's called blossom end rot. So it's right on the bottom of the tomato, and it appears as a black sunken area, which could look like a bite. And what that is caused by is a lack of calcium. Now, don't go out and buy calcium and pour on your soils. There is plenty of calcium in most of our soils. If you think about the gypsum plant, you know, we have calcium. So what you'll want to do is make sure you practice watering religiously, because what happens when a tomato grows and doesn't have water, those cells stay small, and when they do receive water again, they're going to break. And the calcium makes those cell walls strong, so it needs the calcium all the way through the cell enlargement period. So if it doesn't have enough water carrying that calcium to the cell, it'll explode basically, and the end of the tomato, then those broken cells will rot, and that's why we call it blossom end rot. Does that kind of explain to you, a beginning gardener, what that question would, if you had that question?
Yeah, so what do I do once I find it's on my plant?
Okay, what I would say, prevention. Once you have it, a tomato, you can't cure that particular tomato, but you can prevent it from happening to other tomatoes. Sometimes people will, if it's a large size tomato, they'll cut that out and eat it. I'm not sure with the hot weather we've been having, I would recommend doing that. The possibility of fungus and bacteria could travel through, even if it looks like good healthy tissue on that tomato, I think I'd throw it in the compost pile. But what you can do to help prevent it is mulching around your plant keeps the water near the roots without drying out. And watering, even when you're gone on vacation, if it hasn't rained, you need to make sure that you get about an inch of water or more to each tomato plant so it doesn't dry out, so that nutrients can travel up to the cells. That kind of answer that for you?
Yeah. So I'm, sorry, novice at this. So what you're saying is the whole plant isn't calcium deficient. It's just that each individual bloom, like as a tomato itself, is developing. Okay. So you can just clip the tomato off and the rest of the plant's fine?
Well, it's what it is in any where it's growing, where the cells are actively growing. They need the calcium to make strong cell walls. So the tomato as a fruit is what will be actively growing. So you just harvest that plant, the tomato off, yes, and throw that away. And new ones that come will, if, as long as you're watering, will receive enough calcium.
Good.
And what was the next question?
Let's see here. Okay. Ooh, this is a good one. Walking through my yard, I have several spots where there is an orange dust-like powder in the grass. It got all over my shoes when I walked through it. What's going on?
And that is a question that I just received several on just this past week. And I did write an article, so you can watch the papers for that. And what this is a fungus. And it's called rust, which, according to the color, is orange color. And what happens is these little spore pustules form on a leaf or the grass blade of the grass. And when they ripen, then they turn orange and spread the spores. So that's what you're getting on your shoes, is this dusty powder. It's a residue of the fungus. And so you're probably thinking, well, what can I do to get rid of it? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, there are chemicals that you can put on any type of fungus to prevent, and not necessarily to cure. But in this case, I would recommend doing nothing as far as chemical, because once the winter sets in, it'll kill that
it'll
off.
Kill it?
And it's not going to do any damage by the time winter gets here. So you're best off just leave it alone. You can try watering it in to get rid of it, raking it off. It's just kind of cosmetic only. It's not really going to cause any damage. Then you might ask me, how did it get there?
Sure, yeah. How did it get there?
Okay, usually what it is when your grass is stressed. So perhaps you're mowing too low. If you mow really low, that's going to stress your grass. So you need to raise your mower height. So it has more surface area. Another thing is again, watering practices. If you're have a lot of water and the leaves remain wet, and especially if the temperature is like between 68 and 85 degrees Fahrenheit and the wet leaves for 48 hours, that's just inviting fungus to grow.
Okay.
Yep. So does that kind of answer your question? Or the question.
The question, yeah.
The question.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the next question. I have beautiful gladiolas in my garden that are in full bloom. They have been there for the last 3 years. The problem with the gladiolas is that they grow too tall. After the buds start opening, the stems are not strong enough, so they bend over. By the time the buds open, most of the stems are broken or bent forward. Why is this happening? You should have a good answer for that. We've had lots of gladiolas in our yard.
At one time, I had over 3,000 gladiolas. I exhibited them at the state fair. And, in fact, if you want to go to the state fair Wednesday, that, let's see, it'd be August 13th. That's the gladiola show down at the state fair in the Ag Building. You can see wonderful specimens of gladiola spikes down there. Get ideas of some colorful ones you might enjoy planting. But back to the question. When the questionnaire said they had been there several years, I really question whether they may be gladiolas or maybe of the hardy type, because the gladiolas we typically grow will not overwinter unless you're really, really lucky. You have to dig them every year and replant them. They grow on corms, and they are not hardy to our cold Iowa winters. So I do wonder about if it is, in fact, a gladiola or perhaps a delphinium. But regardless of these taller blooming plants, with our winds that we get, unless it's a sheltered climate, you're going to need some kind of staking to prevent them from blowing over. And as Lindsay can probably attest to, there have been many times after a heavy rainstorm in the evening with wind, we'd look out in the garden. There they would be laying flat in the mud, mm-hmm. these beautiful blooms that you're waiting patiently for. So what I've discovered a person can do, if you hadn't staked them, is go out in the mud, barefoot. It works best. You can wash your feet better than shoes. And just mud them back in, just kind of tamp the ground gently with your foot until they stand upright again. And they'll continue to grow for you that way. Messing with stakes and individually staking with a bamboo is an option, but if you're growing several, it's too much of a pain. So hoe the soil up against them as they grow, plant them a little deeper, or other things that you can do.
So, and maybe I'm asking a silly question, but what about if you just kind of improvise, could you use like a peony?
Oh, a peony cage?
Cage or something to try to help them grow up?
I guess it would depend. Well, if you planted them in a circular fashion, it would, but I'm just envisioning
a row.
If you did a row, that would be a lot of wasted space. But if you planned ahead and planted where they could come up in that circular area, probably it would work. But you want to remember you need to leave air circulation. So, again, any type of fungus will grow when leaves remain wet. So we want to provide plenty of air circulation. And if you plant any kind of bulb too close, they're going to compete for nutrients and water in that site. So that's why we see so many of these plants in a row, so they have more soil area for water and nutrients.
Okay, they're just high maintenance plants. You got to dig them up, and then you need to stake them because the blooms are beautiful, but they have a tendency to fall over.
And this is probably why we don't see as many gladiolas.
They're beautiful.
In Grandma's day, everyone grew glads because they had the time. And I think, again, like I agree with you, they are beautiful flower. I love how they stay fresh. They bloom from the bottom up, and they'll bloom all the way to the top. You can bring them in the house and just remove those wilted florets at the bottom, and it still looks fresh.
That's my favorite thing about them. If you had them cut for a couple of days, you can just pull the bottom off, and it looks like a brand new.
Yep, just trim the bottom.
And you can trim the bottom, and it's like a brand new arrangement.
And it just gets a little shorter as you go, yep. So they're very popular in floral displays, too. So anyway, do you think that we answered that for our listeners enough?
I feel satisfied.
Oh, I'm glad that
if there's
did.
Any other questions, they can call in.
Yes,
if they
again,
didn't
that,
answer that good depth enough, they can give us a call.
And that's 955-1400, and help stump the horticulturalist today by calling.
Stump the horticulturalist.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Okay, next question on your list, Lindsay.
My coneflower started looking really weird and deformed, so I looked online and diagnosed them with having aster yellows. It suggested removing the infected plants. Will it be necessary to remove the entire plant or just the infected flowers and maybe some leaves? I hate to pull it out of my perennial, or I hate to pull out all of my perennial coneflowers.
Yeah, this is a disease that we see. It's a viral disease, so there's really no cure for it. And when they say that the looks weird, and probably what happens is that center of the cone flower have this happen in my own garden. Instead of looking brown, it will start turning green and sending up little ray petals in weird positions, sometimes right in the middle of the cone itself. And people think, oh, I've got a new cultivar here or something to hybridize. But what that is, it's caused, the virus has caused a mutation in the growing of the plant. So what you want to do to prevent it from affecting your healthy plants is to remove that totally out of your garden and remove as much soil as you can, because that virus will be present in that soil and you don't want to replant in that same soil, because you'll just probably be planting right back into the virus. And how a virus enters is through a cut or a wound, or maybe little nematodes even made bites in the roots, and that could allow virals to enter our plants. So again, removing as much as that soil out of the area will help prevent. Luckily, coneflowers, you know, they're pretty much a dime a dozen anymore, so you wouldn't feel bad about removing them. But several other plants can get the virus as well. Asters, of course, being the name Asters yellow. And so again, remember that it is a virus, and don't put it in your compost pile, because our composts do not get hot enough to kill viruses typically, so you'd probably just want to wrap it in a bag and throw it in your garbage to dispose of that. So
okay. So it's a virus, so once it's there, it stays there, right? How far, you said remove the dirt and the plant, how far would you go out? Would you take it out like a
just
foot,
around the surrounding roots, I would
just
say.
Just as far as the roots go, that's where you would,
like when
go
you spade
to
down
it
to okay. take it, just take as much of that soil out and maybe put in some fresh soil.
Okay, so if I know my area has this virus, I've taken the plant out and added some new dirt, but do I want to replant cornflowers there, or what would you, it would be?
Well, you might want to consider planting something different, but just remember that this, it's a virus disease in the plant, but it's transmitted by like leaf hoppers and bugs or cuts. They transmit it from the diseased plant to a healthy plant. So if they're taking a bite out of the diseased plant, they go to your healthy plant, then they're injecting that healthy plant with the virus. So that's why it's important to remove things like that right away. So,
okay, and they can call you and ask you, okay,
exactly,
I have a virus on a coneflower. What's a flower that's going to be resistant to this particular virus? Because like you've told me before, that viruses are particular with each individual plant family, just like viruses are with mammals. So
exactly. So one virus is not necessarily going to affect the same virus as in another plant. So a tomato disease virus, the tomato wilt, will not necessarily affect your sedum plant. They're species particular on these viruses.
Good. Okay. So there is hope.
Yes, we would hate to live in a world where there is no hope. Again, Yvonne and Lindsay McCormick are here to discuss horticulture today, and gardening specifically. Horticulture sounds a little bit intimidating, so maybe we just ought to keep it to gardening here today. But needless to say that Yvonne is an expert in the field. Lindsay is coming along, I guess. Is that the way we can describe that, Lindsay? I mean, you finally, after all these years, have decided to become involved.
I think she's heard that several times. After all these
blossoming.
Years.
After
she's
all
oh, did you hear that? She
blossoming.
Said she's
blossoming. I like that one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes at AM 1400 KVFD, the voice of Fort Dodge.